We are going to open with me, because I was too late to find someone else to read. So I'm going to share the opening words from Wendell Berry. We clasp the hands of those that go before us and the hands of those who come after us. We enter the circle of each other's arms and the larger circle of lovers, whose hands are joined in a dance, and the larger circle of all creatures passing in and out of life, who also move in a dance, to a music so subtle and vast, no one hears it, except in fragments. We're going to welcome to the front for our chalice lighting, Jeremy Aiden and Harlan Small.
Our light is the light of the sun, keeper of all we love. Our light is the light of the earth, provider of sustenance. Our light is the light of all living things, life precious like our own. Our light is the light of each of us, bound together in need and hope. Our light is the light of the cosmos, keeper of all we know.
I'm Ruth Calden, old-time member and a member of the Prairie History Committee. And I was looking through my albums for old prairie pictures, and I came upon a couple of pages here of photographs of a one-act play that was put on in 1998. And then I learned that Ann Urbanski, a member since 1982 and very active here, and who had a great hand in this particular play, was going to be moving with her husband down to Santa Fe sometime this year. So I said, Ann, we should do this play again as a tribute to you. And so she said, well, I don't think I have it. So she looked around, and then a couple of weeks later, she said, I found it. Here's the script.
Yeah.
And Anne has done a lot of things around here besides writing this. And she has been vice president. She has had 3 terms as secretary.
3 years, not 3 terms.
Okay. She's been the head of a number of committees, denominational affairs, and membership and communications, and is a very loyal member of the choir. So, Anne, I'd like you to come up and just tell about how this came about.
Well, we, like as Ruth said, we presented this play first with slightly different dramatis personae cast in fall of 1998. I used to belong to, back in the old days of listservs, in the 90s, I belonged to the UU listserv, and there was a guy in the listserv named Doug Muter, who is actually still a contributing editor to the UU World magazine. And in 97 or 96, Doug wrote a short story that he posted on UU's Al called Sydney and God. And when I read the story, I thought, you know, this might make a cool one-act play for somebody to put on. So I took it upon myself with his permission to turn it, because they had a lot of great dialogue, to turn it into a little play. And so we put this on in 1998, and the characters at the time were the narrator, which I performed, a Lutheran pastor named Pastor Tenhouse, who at the time was played by Al Nettleton, Sydney, who was played by Warren Hagstrom, and God, who was played by the late, great George Calden, inimitably. And so anyway, when Ruth asked me to to do this again, I did manage to find the script. And in the process of going through the script, I decided to change things up a bit, update things a little bit, and tighten it up a little bit, because I was an editor for 30 years, so I know how to do that. So anyway, without further ado, I'm going to actually be portraying both the narrator. The narrator is basically the pastor's thoughts, so I'm going to be the narrator and the pastor, and you'll find out who the other people are later. Okay. In seminary, they taught us to make eye contact with the congregation. Write your sermon down so it's all clear in your head, Professor Voorhees taught us. but for God's sake, don't stand up there staring down at your text. They want to see the whites of your eyes, not the top of your head. Back then, I scoffed at the notion that form was so important. Surely it was my brilliant ideas that everyone would come to hear. Older, wiser, and in my third church now, I took his advice. I have a text, but I rarely look at it. I look out at the congregation, I make eye contact. And I see a lot. I see the young married couples who sit close together and how they drift apart over the years. I see the 50-ish divorced women who sneak into the back just as the prelude ends. They haven't been to church since the kids were little, and they're not sure what they're doing here now either. But their friends don't know any single man, and they're not ready to go to the bars or try an online dating service. So here they are. I see the teenagers who think I'm boring and can't wait until they're old enough to sleep in on Sundays without their parents putting up a fuss. I see the young parents who are too tired to follow what I'm saying and just sit there hoping they can make it through the service without the baby crying. Yes, I've seen a lot in the ministry, and I've learned not to speak my thoughts out loud. And then one Sunday, I saw Sydney. He came by himself, sat near the front, and listened so hard, I wondered at first if the association had sent someone to review me. He was older, and what was left of his hair had turned white. No one would sit within 3 feet of him in the pew because he fidgeted constantly. He crossed his legs one way, then the other, then leaned forward and rested his chin in his fist, his elbows on his knees. One Sunday, he came up nervous and breathless, like a boy about to ask for his first date.
Pastor Canos, my name is Sydney.
Technical difficulties.
I think that what you're talking about is very important.
I was having my usual post-performance amnesia. I had no idea what I had talked about.
Thank you, Sydney. Thank you, Sydney. And welcome to our church.
Yes.
Then he was gone, and an older woman was complaining about the new hymnals. This went on for most of the winter. Sydney would come in and sit near the front and hang on my every word. Sometimes scribbling on a notepad, sometimes seeming to be calculating something. And then at the door, he would look as if he had something very important to say to me, only to chicken out at the last minute and blurt some trivial compliment. Finally, a few weeks before Easter, after complimenting me, he said,
"I have to talk to you right away."
After church is the absolute worst time to talk to a minister. Our heads are still buzzing. Three different committee chairs desperately need to talk about some perceived emergency. The young couple getting married in a week wants to be reassured for the 10th time that the ceremony will go smoothly. Countless congregants have noticed that I misquoted a piece of poetry in my opening words.
Call the office tomorrow and we'll set up a time.
It won't wait. I know I should have told you sooner, but you just couldn't, and now it won't wait.
Can it wait 5 minutes while I visit the bathroom? Just go to my office and wait for me.
Sure. 5 minutes.
Ministers are rarely punctual. Half of the job is planning, and the other half is improvising because something always comes up. Between me and the bathroom, there was a sea of people trying to get my attention, and it took me 7 minutes to get through that sea and then back to my office, where I found Sydney sitting, fidgeting, and more wound up.
As soon as I figured it out, I started looking for someone to talk to him. I mean, I can do the calculations, so I know what and where and when he's coming. But I don't know anything about religion. I wouldn't know what to say to him. It's once in many lifetimes opportunity, and I know I just blow it. So I started looking for someone to talk to him, and somebody who'd know what to say. And I picked you. to talk to him.
Wait, slow down. Who is coming? Who did you pick me to talk to?
God.
Part two, in which Sydney presents a calculation involving creation, relativity, and the velocity of God. In the course of my ministry, I'd run into a lot of people with unusual ideas, and every church seemed to have conspiracy theorists of one sort or another. You get used to it. The usual unusual, one of my friends calls it. So Sydney wanted me to talk to God for him. I could deal with it. Maybe you should start at the beginning.
Oh, the beginning, that's funny. I mean, it really does start at the beginning. Pastor, you believe in Genesis, don't you?
I hate to answer questions like this.
Well, it's part of the Bible.
Well, yes, I guess I do.
But what about carbon-dated rocks? The fossils on Mount Everest, the light rays that have traveled millions of years to get here, do you believe in them too?
I didn't like the way this was going. I don't really know what to think about all that. I mean, I've seen the fossils and the dinosaur skeletons, and I know some astronomers, and they've explained their point of view to me. It all sounds very convincing. I don't really understand everything, but I guess I like to think that maybe evolution was God's mechanism for building us.
That's what I liked about you when I heard you speak. That's why I decided to choose you instead of the others. I listened to because you don't like to go around saying this is false and that is false and Genesis is true, science is true, all at once, both at the same time. You're open-minded like that.
More than a few of my parishioners have noticed the same trait in me, though they prefer to call it wishy-washiness.
I suppose so.
But there's still the six-day thing. It's hard to get around. Was creation 6 days like Genesis said, or close to 14 billion years like science says?
That is the problem.
It's not a problem, it's a clue.
He waited to see if I would guess where he was going, and he could have waited another 6 days or 14 billion years, because I had no idea.
Pastor, have you ever heard of the Lorentz contraction?
Actually, I had. Not many people in the church knew this, but I had been a math major my first time around in college, several years before I decided to go to the seminary. I remembered a formula that had to do with square roots and the speed of light.
Isn't it something from Einstein's theory of special relativity?
Yeah. When you travel at speeds close to the speed of light, lengths contract and time expands. The faster you go, the larger the effect. Do you see what this means?
I didn't. We stared at each other.
Genesis was written from God's frame of reference. 6 days go by. In our frame of reference here on Earth, almost 14 billion years go by. Now, do you see?
God's moving faster than we are?
Yes. But not just faster. We can figure out precisely how fast he's been going by plugging into the Lorentz contraction formula. Well,
formulas flew by quickly as Sydney solved the question for V, God's velocity. He got an answer, which I knew I would never remember. That's really interesting. I've always wondered how evolution and Genesis could both be true, but I never thought of that solution. I'm glad he showed that to me.
No. You don't understand yet. That's just the beginning.
I had been afraid of that. There's more?
So.
Wait. There was. Sydney pulled out a white piece of paper with a color graphic he'd done on his computer. It was a timeline running horizontally along the long part of the paper.
See, here's the Big Bang. Right here. The Big Bang. And now the formation of our solar system over here. And then we get to the cooling of the Earth. And the first plant life, and finally, near the right edge, we have the first Homo sapiens. So you see, I've marked the blocks, first day, second day, and so on, up to the sixth day. Now, do you see?
That's a very attractive illustration. Did you make it yourself?
Look at the length of the days.
The first day took up about 2/3 of the timeline. The second day took up maybe half of what was left. The days keep getting shorter.
Yes, each of God's days takes significantly less earth time than the previous one, which means?
Which means God is slowing down?
Yes. That V we calculated before was just God's average velocity. But assuming that God was traveling at the speed of light at the instant of the Big Bang, and that he has been decelerating smoothly since then, and each of his days has the length that we can see it has, and we can predict just how fast God is traveling at any given moment. We can figure out how fast he is traveling now, and we know when his next day will end.
And when is that?
Tuesday.
This Tuesday?
Yes, I've calculated that this Tuesday at 6:28 p.m. God will end his eighth day since the creation. And like all other days, I think he'll show up here on Earth to check things out.
And I suppose you know where he'll be, too?
Yeah, about 30 miles from here out at Jefferson County Park.
I leaned back in my chair, looked at the door, and tried to calculate how long it would take me to race out of the room. How did you figure that out?
Do you know any quantum chromodynamics?
Part 3, in which we observe that not all theophanies are equally profound. Theophany means appearance of God. My family did not see me pick up Sydney on Tuesday and drive to Jefferson. They didn't hear about it either. Nobody did. It's part of my code of ethics, not to tell people things I don't believe myself. And I didn't believe it at all. There I was in a car with a guy I knew nothing about, going off to see God. I felt I could assert with some confidence that this was not happening. Sydney was in an amazingly good mood. He brought a folder of calculations and some measuring devices. He told me how glad he was that I was coming, and how he had done well to confide in me. He said how comforting it was to know that he had brought a minister, someone who would know how to talk to God when he showed up. I just listened and drove and thought ministerial thoughts like, this is really stupid, I don't believe I'm doing this. We arrived at the park with about a half an hour to spare. Sydney set up his devices, took some readings, and did some last-minute fine-tuning of his calculations. I had bought some chairs from the church, and I set them up, one for each of us and one in the spot that Sydney designated.
How long is he going to be here?
2 minutes and 23 seconds.
With 1 minute to go, we sat down. I stared at the spot Sydney had indicated and felt unbelievably stupid. What would Gary Gates, our board president, think if he could see me here? Maybe the whole thing was an episode of Punked or the old candid camera show. Maybe the entire committee on ministry would step out at the appropriate moment and have a good laugh.
Three, two, one.
Hello, how's everybody? Hey, good to see you, Sam. Good to see you. That's a great beard. I may get one of those someday. I probably should get that. Good to see you. How are you doing? Good to see you. Amy, good to see you. Amy. How are you? Nice praying. I like the praying. It's very good. Sir, how are you doing? Very good to see you all. You guys saying your prayers? I hope so. You get your husband, make him a little cooler today. Hey, how are you? Good to see you. Good to see you. Sir, how are you doing? Good. Oh, yeah, what a congregation. What a congregation. Pride goes before a fall.
The air began to shimmer a little. No, I was kidding about myself. It was shimmering a lot. Lights and colors of all sorts were coming in and out of focus, starting to take shape, and then, just when you could almost say what the shape was, coming apart again.
He's here.
And he was. Or at least something was. I saw a fairly dapper-looking man in a dark suit. He looked at us with considerable interest.
Very, very good. I thought someone would be here.
God.
I suppose if you have to call me something, That will do. Just fine.
He looked, well, I have a hard time saying what he looked like. He was there quite clearly, and yet he wasn't. It was like those magic eye posters that you stare at for 20 minutes or so before you see something. And when you finally see it, you think, how much of this am I imagining? That's exactly what I was thinking. There he was, white male, English speaking, older than me, but still in good shape. And I thought, well, how else was I going to see him after 13 years in Lutheran Sunday school and 4 in Lutheran Minnesota Seminary? Apparently, even I, a female minister and a feminist, called up the stereotypical image of God. My brain needed to call up a God image in order to deal with the situation at all, and this is what it had in stock.
Why are you here? I mean, here now and all.
Just thought I'd stop by to check things out, see how you're doing. Can't stay long, though. Lot to do, you know, but I like to pop in around the end of each day and look at my work close up.
And?
I think it's good. Pretty good. Pretty, pretty, pretty good. Marvelous, in fact. You're doing great here. Even better than I expected.
We're doing fine?
Yes, of course. Did you think so?
Well, I mean, we've got wars and famines. Our population is out of control. We're polluting everything, and we can't stop killing each other.
You'll figure something out. You're an intelligent species, you know. I have faith in you.
You have faith in us?
Well, of course. I did a very good job on you, you know. You're well made. Well enough, anyway.
For the first time in days, I began to feel the disquieting itch of intelligence in my brain. Well enough for what? The lights began to shimmer around him again.
Sorry I can't stay longer. It's been wonderful getting to see you and talking to you and having this conversation. You're so much more interesting than the ferns. I can't wait to see what happens when I pop in tomorrow. Well, I suppose you two will be dead by then. But I'm sure someone will figure it out and be here to talk to me. It's been lovely. This is a marvelous world, you know. I think I'll retire here once I slow down enough. Try to enjoy it.
I was right.
We've seen God.
Yes, for all the good it did us. Epilogue. I never told my congregation about the conversation with God. It was a week before I told my spouse, and then only because he knew that something was up and pulled it out of me. I don't know whether he believed me or not, but at least he never made an issue of it. Neither did I. After I dropped Sydney off at his apartment, I never saw him again. I tried to look him up a month or so later, but he was gone to somewhere or other, and nobody quite knew when he would be back. This was quite a few years ago. For a while, I tried to put it out of my mind, focus on the day today, and ignore the fact that I had spent 2 minutes and 23 seconds with God without getting the slightest bit of useful information from him. But lately, as I too begin to slow down and think about my eventual retirement, I come back to this episode more often. Lately, as I stand in the pulpit, making eye contact and trying to put energy into my voice, I imagine that I see Sydney sitting near the front, resting his chin in his fists. Sometimes I even imagine that I see that dapper man. He stands in the back by the ushers and listens to my words of wisdom, apparently oblivious to the divorced women in the back row giving him the once-over. Once in a while now, I think about what he said. And maybe, now that I'm old enough to start lowering my expectations of myself, the information I got from him wasn't so useless after all. Maybe we are made well enough, and maybe we don't need to know what for. And it is a marvelous world. With the amount of time I have left, however long that may be, I'm going to try to enjoy it.
We have a little bit of time.
for discussion. As most of you probably know, God doesn't appear often at Prairie, but since he's here today, if anyone has any questions for him, go for it.
Nice threads.
Got it at a bargain. No questions for God?
Other than why?
Okay, well, this...
It's above my pay grade.
Says good. Says good. Well, this, you know, this is, this was something, like I said, that originally was a short story by Doug Muter. And I think basically this may represent Doug's conception of God, but I think it's an interesting way to look at how to make, how to see see that there could be a God involved in evolution. I know that evolution is a pretty strong tenet, I think, among most UUs. I believe that, though I don't have a factual basis for that. It's what I believe. And but I think, you know, this story spoke to me, obviously, 20 years ago when I first read it. And I'm kind of surprised. I don't know that he ever published it anyplace else, or even in, like, say, UU World. But it was... you know, I think it gives a framework for attempting to think about how you could make God and evolution intersect.
Let me just say, I would not put too much stock in this all-seeing and all-knowing stuff. I'm actually still trying to figure out how a toaster works. So.
he's still in character. I like that.
So.
Do you like raspberry pie? There's a lot of that up there. If you're going up there. But that said, I'm very impressed with your congregation, particularly the fact that you have coffee before the service. Not all places do. The one thing I would say, though, is that I also visited First Society recently. You know, First Society, yeah, on the west side. And what I liked was that they had that spire, that big spire, yeah, you know, which is, of course, a symbol of something. You don't have that. You got kind of a flat roof here. And, so just a suggestion.
Talk to the building committee.
This was in 80s.
Yeah, I think that the God is Dead movement was really in the 70s to maybe the early 80s. It was long before this play. Oh, and Eileen, I have thought about doing this. Like I said, I had Doug Muter's permission to write this up, and I actually did receive a request from somebody a couple of years later. It might have been somebody, and I can't remember her name, who had been associated with Prairie at one time around the time we did this, and who had moved to somewhere in the Southwest, but I couldn't find, at that point I didn't know where my copy of the play was, and so I couldn't send it to her. But I have updated it, and I now have it. I can make a PDF file of it.
I think that, and that's what I was kind of going at, you know, the mad scientist misfit, we all have a little bit of that. But I'm also thinking about conversations that I've had with my fundamentalist cousins, of saying, all right, if God created the world, why didn't God create evolution? Why didn't God create this timeline of the 12 million years? And the conversation usually goes at that point.
Yeah.
Well,
he's as neat as a pin.
Yes, he's a very neat guy.
In my perspective, the curly hair is good, is the best, so I'm sorry you didn't... I don't know. I'll have to talk to my secretary who handles genetics on that one. By the way, Mary, I had a little conversation with the person that you mentioned who wrote God is Dead, and I said, and you're next.
Well, thank you, everybody.
Yes, we'll be having, after the service, we'll be selling dispensations in the back. And 10% goes to Prairie. So, if
$5 for mortal sins and $3 for venial sins. Is dispensations, is that the right word?
That's right. That's indulgences. That's indulgences.
By the way, perhaps some of you may remember the first time this was put on in 1998, George Calden, Ruth's deceased husband, played the role of God. So this is now the second time in prayer history that a Jewish guy has played the role of God.
Go your ways, knowing not the answers to all things, yet seeking always the answer to one more thing than you know. John W. Brigham. Thank you for coming, everybody. Please extend the hand of friendship, grab some coffee, and enjoy a wonderful day.